The following program comes to you as part of the Africa Health Network, a service of the Voice of America to our audience throughout the African continent.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Lino Ahmoudou, and welcome to Health Chat. Get this, well, more than 118 people here in the United States are waiting for organs, and about 18 people die every day awaiting transplants. In many places like sub-Saharan Africa, observers say the situation is more difficult. Being an organ donor can save several lives. However, it is often possible due to the loss of life. Many people feel uneasy about becoming organ donors. On the program today, we will look at some issues around organ donation and transplantation. To enlighten us, we are joined via phone from Boston by Dr. Francis Delmonico, President of the Transplantation Society and Professor of Surgery at Harvard Medical School, Massachusetts General Hospital. Dr. Delmonico, welcome to the program.
With you.
Okay, and you're there with us, Dr. Delmonico?
Yes.
Okay, great. I hear you now. Thank you so much for joining us. And also joining us via phone from Cape Town, South Africa, is transplant surgeon Dr. Elmi Muller, a counselor of the Transplantation Society representing Middle East and Africa. And Dr. Muller, well, we don't have Dr. Muller yet, and she will join us in a few moments. Let me remind the listeners, if you would like to participate in the show with your questions or comments, you can send them to us via email, healthchat@voanews.com, or you can call us at 202-619-3111, the U.S. country code is 1, and ask your international operator to reverse the charges, or you can post your questions on facebook.com/healthchat. We will discuss organ donation in a moment, but first, here is an overview. Kristen Simpson is at risk of end-stage renal failure. To stay alive, she needs 3 hours of dialysis at a time, 3 times a week. The young woman was diagnosed with nephritic syndrome when she was a teenager, a disease that prevents her kidneys from functioning properly. She is on the organ transplant list in South Africa and has been waiting for a kidney for over 2 years. Simpson underscores the importance of promoting awareness about organ donation.
The first thing to do is educate yourself about it. And, you know, it doesn't mean you have to give your kidneys now. You can just, anything can happen. And your one body can save 7 lives.
Organ donation is the donation of biological tissue or an organ of the human body. Experts say the organs from one donor can save or help as many as 50 people. Organs that can be donated include kidneys, heart, bone marrow, and even skin. Most organ and tissue donations occur after the donor has died, but some organs and tissues can be donated while the donor is alive. Health experts say more organ donors are needed, especially in developing countries. Jules Vermeulen is Director of Communications at the Organ Donor Foundation, a non-profit, non-governmental organization that aims to promote the concept of organ donation in South Africa. He says the situation is dire in the country.
Well, currently in South Africa, 4,200 people are waiting for life-saving organs in South Africa, and less than 300 will actually get an organ and live. The rest will unfortunately may not make next year or the year after that. We get people that wait up to 7 or 8 years. So it's really a desperate situation.
The Exchange, a pop-up fashion boutique in Cape Town, recently launched an effort to address the issue. The store does not accept cash or credit. Instead, consumers choose any item in exchange for registering as an organ donor. The store is stocked with clothing and accessories donated by South African designers. Ploy Furomnam, a client, says she's happy to make a difference.
I'm always interested in donating my organs, you know, and it's just a funky way of doing this thing. So I really wanted to support this organization.
The store is a joint project of the digital marketing agency, Native, and the Organ Donor Foundation. The pop-up boutique, which opened this past May, will remain open until all the clothing and accessories have been exchanged. The foundation hopes to increase the list of organ donors to at least 500.
And now I believe Dr. Elmai Muller is with us. Dr. Muller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, welcome to Health Chat.
Wonderful. Thank you for inviting me to attend.
Great. And now let me have, why don't I have you, start the discussion. But we heard the piece earlier. Let me have your reaction on what we heard earlier. Just in general, when we hear organ donation, organ transplantation, some people seem uneasy about this topic because very often we tend to think, a lot of people tend to think, if you are donating an organ, it means you are dead. But it's not always the case, Dr. Muller.
Yes, that's correct. We can be, there are living donors and deceased donors. And in South Africa, we do both these types of donors. So not all organ donors are dead. And just a small amount of people who die will qualify as organ donors depending on what they die of and whether they are suitable.
Okay. Now, Dr. Delmonico, what does it take when let's say you have an organ that needs to be transplanted from one patient to another? Where does the process start, really?
The process starts in the identity of the person in the hospital, someone who is either going to die or who has died, and a doctor in the hospital who's been caring for that patient must refer the individual, this patient that's either dying or has died, to the organ procurement organization. There's an agency that's set up within the country that enables the recovery and distribution of organs from the deceased. So the process starts by the physician who's caring for an individual in the hospital to think about organ donation at the time of someone's death.
Now, does the process differ from one country to another, one region to another, or is it the same process?
No, as it turns out in traveling now around the world, it becomes quite evident that the process is very much the same. In those hospitals in which patients are cared for that have catastrophic injuries that involves either a stroke or a tumor of the brain or some trauma, there is a point for some patients in which the treatment is no longer going to be successful and the coma is now irreversible. The person cannot be restored to a consciousness or awareness, and the person is no longer breathing on their own. The person can be declared dead by neurologic criteria. Mm-hmm. And it is upon that occurrence that the physician caring for this individual can now consider others, save lives by the opportunity of organ donation.
Okay. Now, Dr. Muller, tell us a little bit about the case in South Africa specifically, in terms of availability of tissues or organs, according to the piece. Obviously, it is a critical issue. It is a very challenging to find donors, to find organs and tissues. Now, in Africa specifically, South Africa, how is the issue, and what are the main concerns in South Africa?
Right. So South Africa has got a well-established transplant community which use organ donors both for solid organ and for tissue. But if you look at the wider problem in the continent of Africa, we are the only place on the continent where we have deceased donation. So we are the only place on the whole continent of Africa where people who die are able to donate their organs. We are struggling in South Africa to get enough organ donors for what we need. As you said in your piece, we have about 4,500 people waiting on waiting lists in South Africa, and our average donor availability is about 300 people per year. And this is the result of many problems. I think the one problem is that we live in an area in the country where there are still a large amount of socially disadvantaged people, people who have been uneducated about transplantation as such. And for this reason, we find that we still have quite a large percentage of the population who will, when we approach them for organ donation, they would actually say no. And as healthcare professionals, one of our main challenges is to educate these people. We find that in this socially disadvantaged groups of people, as they get educated, the consent rates change and they say yes more often for organ donation.
Okay.
However, it's still not enough and we still have a large waiting list.
Indeed. And let me just I want to have a better understanding. What you said surprised me a little bit, although I had an idea when I was doing all my research, that in South Africa, it is the only place on the continent where people who die can donate organs. So is part of it due to the type of policies that countries have, or is this just because of beliefs, cultural beliefs, and the likes? What is the fundamental problem here?
Right. So the first main problem is a legislation problem. So in a large part on the continent, there is not legislation for deceased donation. And of course, we cannot practice deceased donation if there's no organized legislation. And this is something we as the Transplantation Society are working on to try and improve this situation. But even in a country like South Africa, where we do have the necessary legislation, we are still struggling with cultural problems, with religious problems, and with educational problems. And that is going to be probably in the long term a problem in the whole of the continent. And even if when we get the legislation issue sorted out, we might still have to work very hard on these other issues.
Okay. Dr. Dalmoneko, speaking of legislations, there have been in the news recently here in the U.S. the issue about a young girl and a young boy whose cases were ruled by the judge. And I wanted to have your reaction, even though our listeners may not necessarily know the background story on this news item, but how do you feel about the fact that a judge got involved in determining if a young girl, a child, could obtain an adult organ? How do you feel about that? Do you think it's something that should be perhaps a medical professional is better qualified? Not to get into a debate about a political debate or anything. I just wanted to have your take on this situation as a healthcare provider.
The way you pose your question gives me some sense of your concern, similar concern, that a U.S. district court judge in Philadelphia would be making a ruling about allocation. I understand, however, the intent of the judge, and I'm very familiar with the case. This is a child that has been placed on the lung list, waiting a lung transplant, and the parents of the child went to the court because of their perspective that the child was unable to get an opportunity of lung transplantation. The judge ruled a temporary restraining order that necessitated UNOS, the Procurement and Transplant Network of the United States, to consider its policy about lung transplantation for children. And last night, UNOS deliberated and came to the conclusion that there should be a change made. Now, I'll just very briefly say the following. I agree with you as you were posing the question. It is not the matter of the district court to set allocation policy for the United States or any other country. Furthermore, when one is dealing with public policy, it isn't a matter of a specific individual, but it has to be a system-wide issue of determining or balancing fairness with utility, what is the best use of a scarce organ. And by the way, an important message to everyone listening, we don't have enough organs. And this is the plight of this young child that made her parents go to the district court to try and have some relief of what they perceive to be an unfair allocation policy. Finally, however, it does seem that it's an important opportunity always for someone to be considered in an exceptional case. And UNOS has the provision of enabling a review board to determine this, and it shouldn't be the district court. It should be a group of physicians quite familiar with all of the aspects of lung transplantation and this child's clinical condition that could make such a ruling. It doesn't mean that every child has to go and is entitled to a ruling, mm-hmm. but the opportunity of such a ruling should be there, and that's what UNOS decided last night.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for enlightening us on this question, because, of course, it's such a very critical and very sensitive subject when it comes to organ transplantation. Now, Dr. Muller, in South Africa, what do you see? I know you went over a little bit some of the issues, why there is a lack of organ donors. But perhaps you can tell us about what measures the government is taking or perhaps should take, not only in South Africa, but just in general in Africa, to help this process move forward and have more organs accessible to patients who need it. Well, right now, I will toss that question to you and give you a few seconds. And as we take a break for the news, and when we come back, I will have your reaction. We'll be right back. Here are the news.
The World Health Organization says case numbers in Africa's meningitis season this year were the lowest in 10 years. WHO says it is due to a cheap new vaccine designed to treat a type of the disease common in the so-called meningitis belt. The vaccine, called Menafrivac, was developed with funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, specifically for use against meningitis A. This is a type that causes regular epidemics in Africa. Detailing data from January 1st to May 12th, the United Nations Health Agency say that just under 9,250 meningitis cases, including 857 deaths, were reported in 18 of the 19 African countries under enhanced surveillance for meningitis. Also, the World Health Organization says the number of overweight and obese children in the developing world is climbing at an alarming rate. It says an estimated 43 million children worldwide under the age of 5 were overweight or obese in 2011. Three-quarters of these children now live in low- and middle-income countries, many on the African continent. In Africa, the number of overweight or obese children has doubled in the past 20 years. The WHO says being overweight or obese can lead to serious long-term health problems like diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. Finally, a new study has found that a form of psychological treatment called group cognitive therapy helps ease and reverse the emotional symptoms of victims of rape in war-torn countries. The study involved 157 women over the age of 18 who participated in the therapy groups and 248 rape victims in villages who were treated on one-on-one by sympathetic counselors. After 6 months, 42% of those in individual counseling who were depressed at the outset of the therapy no longer showed signs of depression. But in the cognitive behavior, 70% of women were no longer considered depressed. They say community-based counselors can be trained to provide the service with good results. And that's a roundup of today's health news.
Network is happy to announce the top three winners for the Health in Your Community contest, which ran from the month of April. The third place goes to Era Friday Utomi from Edo State, Nigeria, for his drawing depicting health in his community. The second place is Freddy Kachote, who submitted the CD with an HIV/AIDS focus, Hell on Earth, by Anderson Mamamine and the Positive Life Choir from Zimbabwe. And the grand prize winner is
Israel Oshun Dasko of Abuja, Nigeria, for his video entry on preventing mosquito bites in his community. Each of these top winners will receive VOA gym bags are full of goodies and fun stuff. In addition, we have something to send to everyone who entered the contest. So if you entered but did not include a mailing address, please send it to us via email at africahealthnetwork@voanews.com. We encourage you to see the winning entries along with other entries on our website, africahealthnetwork.com. Thanks to everyone who participated and congratulations to the winners.
And welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight's topic is organ donation and transplantation. Joining us via phone from Boston, Massachusetts, is Dr. Francis Delmonico, president of the Transplantation Society. Also joining us via phone from Cape Town, South Africa, is transplant surgeon Dr. Elmai Muller. A reminder that you can send your questions by emailing us healthchat@voanews.com. So before the break, Dr. Muller, I was asking you about what needs to be done to improve organ donation, whether in South Africa or all over Africa, as a matter of fact?
Thank you for asking me that question. It's a very broad question, and obviously you will look differently to the problem in South Africa than what you would look at the problem in Africa and in the continent as a whole.
Sure.
So in the continent as a whole, there are still a huge amount of work that needs to be done, specifically on the legislative aspect of transplantation, but also to provide an infrastructure to push transplantation instead of, for instance, pushing dialysis, to train staff, to educate people, to educate the necessary healthcare specialists to drive this process. In South Africa, the problem is slightly different. We already have an infrastructure. Transplantation is already well established in the country, and we are at a different level where we need to drive the amount of donors that we are having and the amount of training we are giving to medical staff. And this is currently being done by the government, but also by places like the universities. We have started a program where we train medical students from a very early onset on the issues of transplantation, on the issues of referral. And at the moment, for instance, in Groote Hospital, we are discussing issues like required referral, where we are asking specialists to refer certain individuals with specific criteria, for instance, a low Glasgow Coma Scale, fulfilling a certain amount of prerequisite criteria on a medical ground, and to send these patients onto the transplant team. And the second thing we are driving in the country is a public awareness campaign, which we are working with the Organ Donor Foundation. But to just give you an idea, in Cape Town, we have a population of 4 million people, and at the moment, we have 6 transplant coordinators and 4 transplant surgeons. So we are trying to drive this process with minimal staff, and this is something that needs more input and more resources allocated to this problem.
Okay. We have a caller, Patrick from Nigeria. Welcome to Health Chat.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening.
Yeah, I want to find out from a doctor. You see, I am a Nigerian based in Anjou, in Southeast Nigeria. There are some religions in Nigeria that forbids a patient from taking drugs, not to talk of transferring or obtaining an organ to fix to such a patient. In a situation like that, this person or the patient is between life and death. What will the doctor advise such a patient who or has gotten himself in such a dying situation? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your questions. And obviously, he's talking about the role of religious beliefs in terms of how it influences organ donation and even receiving organs, because if the religious leader says do not take drugs and he says do not do any transplantation or give your organs or receive your organs because it's forbidden by your religion, what does the patient do? That's a question of ethics and everything else that is involved around it. Dr. Delmonico, have you seen cases as such where you had to perhaps counsel or address it with families? Or?
I've been involved with organ donation and transplantation for more than 40 years. And I'll say this to the caller, whom I respect his question. There is no religion in the world that prevents someone from undergoing transplantation if now that can restore them to well-being. I don't know of a religious person who would say to a patient, I'm sorry, you must die. You are not permitted to undergo organ transplantation. So I should then ask the caller if he has had some experience in knowing that some religious person would have made that prohibition of organ transplantation. That's the first point. But the second point is this. If there is no religion in the world that I'm familiar with that prohibits someone from undergoing organ transplantation, I would suggest that there should be no religion in the world that prohibits someone from being an organ donor. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the questioner, if I may suggest. Is he aware that there's a religious leader that would deny someone the opportunity of being restored to health through an organ transplant in the year 2013? I would be quite surprised, but I'd be interested to hear the caller's response.
That's a good point, Dr. Delmonico. Dr. Muller, let me have your reaction on this question, but I will change the question a little bit. Being in Africa, in South Africa, do you come across issues with regards to cultural belief, for example?
Yes. I think from my point of view, I feel that I always want to respect people's religious beliefs, people's cultural beliefs, and that it is not my place as a medical doctor to tell people what they should believe and how they should deal with these issues. The only thing I can do as a medical doctor is to give people information, mm-hmm. and they can then make their decision themselves on what they want to do and what their way forward should be. In South Africa, we still have a lot of people who are uninformed about what exactly transplantation entails. And for that reason, they would make decisions believing that this would be against their religion or against their culture without really knowing exactly what we are doing. So what I try and do when I deal with patients is to just give them the medical information and then to give them the space to make decisions themselves. And a lot of people will, when they hear what you say, they will make a decision to donate their organs, sure. and they will be entirely happy with it. Sure. And some people will have some reservation mm-hmm. and will discuss it with some religious leader, and that I respect. And then there are a small group of people who will still say no, even though you've given me the information and I can see that this might not be against my religion, I feel uncomfortable with this. And that I feel is their that is their right, and I respect that.
Okay, great. Dr. Delmonico, we're running out of time, but quickly, I have one question coming from Kenya. Teresa, she says, if I donate my kidney, what are my chances of survival on one kidney? And also, will I need to change my lifestyle to adapt?
So the answer is, there's no need to change one's lifestyle, and one can be well for all of their lives if they themselves are well to begin with. So a very important criterion for being a live kidney donor is to know that you're absolutely well. With that determined medically, then one can live with one single kidney for all of their lives and not need to change their lifestyle.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Francis Delmonico, with President of the Transplantation Society. And Dr. Elmai Muller, counselor at the Transplantation Society, we thank you for joining us. Unfortunately, we're out of time. We hope to continue this conversation another time. And for more on today's topic, log on to our website, voanews.com/healthchat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vunganyi. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.